Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Knights of the Hollow Table. Today, we are covering Chapter 4, and which I affectionately call the Yo Baby episode. Because, as if the internet weren't already exploding before, now we have all of this adorable cuteness that just makes me want to puke all over my couch. Because it's just, it's nothing but Yo Baby this and Yo Baby that. And I'm quickly getting to the point where I hope they kill off Yo Baby by episode 8.
Oh my gosh,
I know,
why?
Right? But we'll get to that in just a moment. In the meantime, Andrea, how are you doing tonight?
I could be doing better, but you know what? Yeah. Like, after such a miserable day, I'm super excited to talk about The Mandalorian. So.
Well, you know, the one thing about miserable days is that they all come to an end. And your miserable day is effectively over. Now you can just sit back and chill and yell at Fred and I, and everything will be awesome. Right?
Amen.
All right. Fred, speaking of getting yelled at, how are you doing tonight?
You know, if you really thought you were in a good mood now, wait until I break this news to you. We're halfway done, Mando.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
No,
that's tragic. Why would he say that?
I think just to rub the salt in the wounds of your day, Andrea.
Might as well.
Yeah.
He figures if he's going to have to...
sleeping on the couch tonight.
Yeah, if he's going to be the whipping boy anyway, you might as well make it good, right? Yeah, we are halfway through the first season, which, you know, it's a very bittersweet thing because, again, with these half-hour episodes and only 4 more episodes to go, it feels like it just started yesterday and we're already halfway done.
When
this
you
is crazy.
Put it that way, 4 more episodes to go, it feels weird.
Yeah. And we've got summaries for the first 2. We talked about that last week. So we kind of like have a vague idea. It sounds like they're probably going to be somewhat episodic, much like this one. At least the next one is. The one after that, maybe not. We don't know. But I'm hoping that the final 2 episodes, at least, are maybe part of a 2-part story arc, and maybe even an extended finale, one can hope.
One can hope. I really do. This is my biggest criticism of this season, is not the number of episodes, but the quantity of time.
Yes, just the overall duration is... I mean, it's a good thing to complain about, the fact that we love a show so much that we're griping about how little of it we're getting. I mean, of all the complaints to have, that's at least a pretty positive complaint.
I think that it's because, like, you want to know what's going to happen next. Like, and that's not, sometimes you just get episodes that's like, okay, the stakes are not really too high on this episode. Like,
right.
We're chill, we're cool. But in this one, like, what's next? What could possibly happen next?
Well, and you know, for a Dave Filoni-based show, though he's not the showrunner on this, and it shows, but a lot of Filoni shows take a long time to get moving and you don't really get a lot of answers. So when we get an episode of The Mandalorian that's a bit slower and a bit more episodic, we kind of feel like we want to complain a little bit. But looking at The Mandalorian overall, we've gotten a lot of answers. We've gotten a lot of story development and movement. There's still a lot to come. There's been a lot of foreshadowing, but at least... I guess to me, it's been moving ahead better than I had expected it to be and better than I had been worried that it would. Again, all due respect to Dave Filoni. It's just there's always a slow build up until things really get going, and things always really do get going in most of his shows. But typically the first season, you kind of just have to get through. And The Mandalorian has not really been that way. We've not really felt like we had to struggle to really sink our teeth into this. So that's good. Yeah. But before we get on to talking about Chapter 4, we do have a few things in the news here. There apparently has been a leaked picture of a Yo Baby Funko Pop.
So cute.
This thing looks sick.
It makes
like,
me sick.
Not sick. It makes me want to throw up, but it makes me want to like go out and buy one. And
oh, no, it makes me want to throw
it to Andrea and make her happy.
Listen, like, I defend the Ewoks.
When you have Yo Baby.
I defend the Ewoks. I'm okay with Jar Jar. I love the Porgs. And I would probably be okay with Yo Baby if it weren't that all anybody wants to talk about with Star Wars right now is Yo Baby. And I'm like, hey, There's a guy with like cool armor and like really cool battle stuff. And hey, there's another guy with even cooler armor. And like, hey, we have a cool Star Wars product now, a good project going on that people can all rally behind and unite. Finally, the Star Wars community that can come together about something. And this is awesome. And nope. Little green elf.
So this brings up an interesting question. I'd like your input. So we're led to believe that this thing is 50 years old.
Yes. Right? Thing. I like that. This thing.
Well, I can't call it a she or a he or a name or a species because we don't know anything.
Well, in this episode, we had two characters, and that's actually a really good point. We did have two characters refer to it as a he.
Oh, okay. Fair. That's right.
But go on.
So he, the kid.
I like it better.
He's 50 years old, and he can't speak.
Right.
So, and he has very, very undisciplined use of the force.
Uh-huh.
So he's probably not going to be like an action point for another 50 years.
Well, no, he'll be dead by episode 8.
If he lives.
Yeah, he will.
So other than protecting this thing for the next 8 seasons, 50 seasons, really, what are they going to do with the guy?
Turn him over to the scientists for experimentation. I mean, really, that's who it belongs to. It's the scientists. So that's, I mean, morally that's speaking, like, that's what you do, right?
Why would you say that? That's like saying,
because
like,
I'm annoyed. There's so much more to talk about.
Owned by scientists who study them.
No, puppies aren't. Puppies are owned by the people who purchase them. Like, I own a puppy. I took good care of my puppy.
No, I said monkeys.
Oh, monkeys? Yeah, no, that's fine too.
Oh my God.
I'm just tired. Like, I liked it at first, and now I'm just so tired of hearing about it that I kind of want it to just go away. And the Funko Pop picture leaks, and everybody's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. And it's like, okay, well, no, it's cool, and like, let's get one. But, like, other things too? No. This. All of existence is about the Yo Baby right now. This
thing is about to dominate Christmas.
Oversaturation. Already, and the products haven't even hit the shelves. Unless, and that brings up another good thing that's somewhat news related, have they hit the shelves up there? Now, here in the United States, we just celebrated Thanksgiving, which is pretty much an exclusively American holiday, American being the United States and not the rest of North or South America. I understand those are Americas as well, but Black Friday has become an international shopping holiday. And I was wondering, have either of you up there in Canada seen any Yo Baby merchandise? I did talk to one person in Target in New York, outside of Syracuse, who indicated that a box had come in and they were opening it up later that afternoon. I did not get to stick around for it.
I have not seen any Yo Baby merchandise.
No, me neither.
That is official from any vendor, okay. Sponsored by Star Wars. But what I have seen, and I shared this with Andrea, is somebody has created a Yo Baby knitted dice bag.
Oh.
It's so cute. He poops dice.
I don't think that's intentional. That's just where his zipper is.
Oh, no. I'm sure if that's where the zipper is, it's probably intentional. If I were making it, it would be intentional.
Well, it could be like across his neck and then you can, you know, accidentally kill him every time.
Whoa. Ooh. Yeah, that would be good.
That's so morbid.
So apparently the merchandise that is coming out, or it may be out already by the time you're listening to this, is primarily clothing stuff. And, oh, you know what? I clicked on this link that you just put in chat here for the Skype call, and it showed a picture, and then immediately upon the picture an entire ad just took over the entire image. That's really annoying. This is kind of cute. Yeah, he poops dice.
That is an awful website.
Wow, he poops dice. Anyhow, it's mainly clothing, and I think like t-shirts and blankets, like the things that could be printed and distributed immediately. At least that's what the guy from Target had said. So if you're looking for things like the Funko Pop doll that got leaked or figures or things like that, it's going to take a while. They've got to do prototypes and they've got to get approval and then they've got to build the molds and then they've got to actually manufacture all of them. And there's quality control and packaging design, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be a little while. So,
yeah, even if Funko went to high speed, I don't know if they'd be able to get this out in time for mass population by Christmas.
No. Definitely, I would say not by Christmas. I would say Funko Pop probably would have a pretty good lead over other places, given their relationship with Lucasfilm and a lot of their packaging is already kind of standardized. And their imaging for the packaging is kind of standardized. And even the mold itself, there's a lot of things they can reuse from a Yoda mold because it's not their Funko Pop line isn't very detailed.
Right.
That being said, probably the hardest thing to do would be what to name it, which is going to have to come from Lucasfilm. And they might just call it the child or the kid for now.
Oh, I imagine if they actually do call it Yo Baby, everybody will be so angry.
Wow. I would love it. I mean, it came from us, right? The first place I saw that was on the Random Chatter Discord. It's
the Green Goblin.
Yeah, I think that's taken.
No.
So listen to this. My luck is so bad. I can never find anything I'm looking for ever when it comes to collectibles. I live in like the worst place in the world to try to get anything when it launches. I literally have not seen Black Series figures here, other than things that are like 3 years old in GameStop. And I can't tell you how long. Over Thanksgiving vacation, I got to go up and visit Tim. My son came with me and we spent Thanksgiving holiday there. And Black Friday, we went out. And as I just said, Target was one of the places I went. But I'll come back to that in a moment. I missed out on the Heavy Infantry Mandalorian action figure, which I think is still going for from 70 to 100 on eBay right now. I missed out on the actual Mandalorian himself, which is all over the place on eBay. I see a lot of them I think $60-$65. Oh, wow. And Cara Dune, before this episode aired, I figured she's going to go up too. And I saw Entertainment Earth had it for, I think, maybe $22 US and then like $6 shipping. So it was about $28, still less than the $30 a lot of Amazon dealers had it. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to get this now. I mean, money's a little tight. I'm going to get it now because I know it's going to go up. And so I did. And I pre-ordered it. It's going to be releasing like I'm going to get it sometime around December 17th, December 19th, something like that. So we're at the Target in New York, not New York City, upstate New York. And it was a buy one, get one 50% off sale. And they had two of them.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
Two Cara Dunes. And I thought, my luck is never this good. I'm going to buy both of these. Maybe I'll give Lou one as a Christmas present. And then I'm going to go home. I'm going to cancel my Entertainment Earth order because that should be really easy to do. And in the wild, located a Black Series figure that I actually wanted and would be one I would go out of my way and even have to, I would pay over retail if I had to get. I was so excited. I get home. There's more to the story.
Oh,
I get home and I go into my email to get the receipt, to get the order number for Entertainment Earth. And there was another email there saying, congratulations, we got some in stock. Your shipment has shipped early. It went out Wednesday. It'll arrive there in a couple of days.
So you now have three Cara Dunes.
So I now have three. And then I contacted Lou and Lou was like, oh yeah, hey, I found one this morning. And I'm like,
Well, so, if you have an extra one.
So I gave one to Tim. Now I may have an extra one. So
Andrea and I also went out for the, it didn't.
Oh, we have a cat purring in the microphone or no, playing with the microphone, doing something with attacking the microphone. Okay. Fred. Yes. You went out on Black Friday.
Putting teeth holes in the microphone. There you go. We went out over the weekend. We did some Christmas shopping. Randomly, we ended up at Walmart. And, of course, we had to go look. And we found a number of the new series.
Yeah.
But I am missing. So I was able to get, I think, about five of them. But I am missing Cara Dune, so 101. and I am missing The Mandalorian.
Yeah, that's the only other one I want. Else.
I have some that I'm missing from an earlier wave as well. So I'm missing 000, Dr. Aphra, and Ezra.
But I saw 000 and Dr. Aphra in a collectible store this weekend too.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, I didn't get to pick them up, but
I haven't looked too hard and I haven't looked online and all that kind of fun stuff. I'll just kind of let Christmas go through. But
yeah,
there's a collectible store here that we've talked about before, Toy Traders here. Mm-hmm. I'll stop in there one of these days and I'll probably be able to grab all of them.
Yeah. Oh, I saw Chopper too. I wanted to get Chopper.
We have Chopper, and that's when Andrea lost her marbles figuring out that how the name was actually invented.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
C1-10P, and if you look at it, it spells chop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Andrea's the most innocent creature.
She caught up.
But like, to be honest, I'm not the one who collects the Black Series. It's Fred. And just trying to look for these figures online is anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
Like, I do not know how he has the amount of Black Series figures that he has. Like, I just had to close my laptop and be like, maybe tomorrow. Because it was so overwhelming.
So what makes it really difficult is they're not numbered when you go searching online, generally speaking. And then two, if you want to look for Rey, there's like, what, 4 or 5 different versions of Rey?
Right. And aren't they all titled? I mean, there's like Rey with something, but for the most part, if you're searching for Rey, you're going to get all of them. Some of them are hard to whittle down.
Yeah. And there's Rey was number 2, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and then there was 2 different, and she came with BB-8. So there was 3 different versions of number 2. So there was pre-movie release where it was Rey with her staff and BB-8. And then there was post-Force Awakens, Rey with her staff and a lightsaber in BB-8.
But numbered differently, yes?
Same number.
Really?
Yeah, I can show you. I have both.
Oh, I believe you.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then there was a variant that was created later where BB-8 had dirt on him instead of just bright white.
Well, so, I think that's just somebody, you know, messing up the manufacturing process. Just people need to get on their quality control a little better. Keep my droid clean.
Could be, but there's
that's interesting.
Yeah. Collectors will collect all 3 of them.
Well, yeah. But yeah, like, give it a different number, you know? Or even like 2A and 2B or something. Like,
very deceiving.
Yeah, even if it said like post Force Awakens release or something like that. So people know and can.
Yeah.
The UPC code is the same.
Really? That just, that blows my mind. Okay. Well, so, Fred, we'll talk offline. I might be able, once that arrives here, maybe I'll get your mailing address. And, my grandfather, who, lived in Ontario most of his life, used to tell me about the Canadian Postal Service. So maybe I'll have to figure out some other way to get it to you. So, because otherwise I don't know how soon it would get there. Not that our postal service is much better. There you go. I may do that. Yeah, we will definitely talk. But
then it's super easy.
In the meantime, I guess Fred and I are both on the lookout for Mandalorian figures, like the Mandalorian himself. So if anybody out there's got some good leads that are at least close to retail, let us know. One other bit of news this week. According to Business Insider, The Mandalorian has now surpassed Stranger Things as the number 1 streaming show.
Wow.
Now, that's not
crazy. That is insane.
So I read that and I thought it meant something other than it did. So let's put it into perspective here. This is not like overall. What this is for a time period from November 17th to November 23rd. So to be fair, Stranger Things has been out for a long time. But Stranger Things has still been solidly dominating as the number 1 streaming show all this time. So this is the first time that something else has taken that number 1 spot. Think of it as like, the Billboard chart for music or something like that. It's not about total number of records sold. It's about total for a particular time period. So for this past week, November 17th to 23rd, there were over 100 million impressions for The Mandalorian, and Stranger Things had just 81 million. So 80% of The Mandalorian, which is still really impressive, but that's really good news. Again, this has been a runaway success for Lucasfilm, and I think even they didn't expect it to be quite this successful. Or at least I like to think that.
No, I have to completely agree. Like, this whole Yo Baby thing, it took them by complete surprise, or they would have had all this manufacturing pre-done.
Yeah, I mean, I know that they wanted to keep... I mean, a lot of the leaks come out from product packaging releases, right? Every time we get a new Star Wars movie, there's a website out of Germany that always has the packaging information for the Lego material. Yep. Every single time. So I know that Lucasfilm wanted to restrict it for that reason, and they knew the merchandising was going to be a little late on it. But you're right, Fred. I think that if they had any idea how viral this was going to have become, and by the way, some of the viral stuff online actually is pretty hilarious. I'll give it that. But yeah, I think that they would have had a little bit more aggressive marketing strategy with it from the get-go. So, all right. Let's talk this episode. Did anybody catch what the subtitle for this episode was? I thought it was The Sanctuary, but I...
Yep, it's The Sanctuary.
Okay, good. I didn't quite catch it because I was just so anxious to get back into the episode to see Cara Dune and all of the awesomeness that we finally get to see Gina Carano in the show. And then, of course, once again, at the end of the episode, he up and leaves.
Yep.
So help me, if she is only in one episode this season, I will sue Lucasfilm, I will sue Disney, I will sue Bob Iger himself, I will own that company by the time I'm done. You watch.
So all you really need to do is just have an online petition.
Oh, yeah, change.org. That fixes everything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we can get Rian Johnson to come in or something.
There you go.
Yeah. Save the series.
That might work. I think we need a petition to have them start over and redo the entire series. Because if they can do it for episode 8 and that Zack Snyder cut of Justice League, they can certainly do it for this.
Absolutely.
All right. So this entire episode takes place on the planet Sorgan. And I mean, it's not technically what would be considered a bottle episode, but it's kind of a... It's at least a very episodic episode as a part of a series, as opposed to a serialized episode where we're not really seeing much that moves the plot forward. The only real thing that we see is at the very end of the episode, one of the bounty hunters catches up with them on the planet, yet another Kubaz. I swear those guys are bad news wherever they go. Like, if you see one of those guys, you might as well just shoot them, because otherwise they're going to screw you somehow. But that's the only thing that we really see that leads anywhere for the overall story, right?
Yes and no. They introduce Cara Dune. Okay.
Sure. So and then they leave her.
But so just like Kweel. And so now we have Cara. So I think they're setting the stage for the team up.
I agree.
So I think if you were just looking at this one episode, sure. Yeah, it's not that important. But if we look at a complete season arc, I bet you it's going to have more meaning than it actually does.
I agree.
We definitely get the impression that there's a lot of bounty hunters still looking for Yo Baby. So that is going to be now a driving force. They're going to have to go kill whoever is commissioning the bounty.
Yeah,
probably. So perhaps that's where the season's going to go next.
Yeah, maybe.
And to be honest, like, the Mando is a lone wolf. To have him recruit, like, I know that he almost did that with the other character, but like, for him to have somebody else in his ship, it takes a while. So I don't know if throwing just everybody onto his ship is the best idea.
Well, if nothing else, it's a small ship. And there's not much privacy with the vac tube. Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that you say that, though, because one of the things about this episode is we get a little bit of an idea of the passage of time. So there's that exposition moment where he's explaining what the plan is and about the training, and it cuts away to a montage during that voiceover of them actually doing training. And you assume that that's got to take several days. And then at the end of the episode, they talk about it's been at least a week since the attack. And, you know, he gave her... She asked him for the pulse. She didn't even ask. She said, give me the pulse rifle. And he gave it to her without hesitation. He obviously trusts her. Because, listen, I ain't giving that rifle up to anybody.
That's what I said to Fred. I was like, that's interesting.
Yeah, that shows some serious trust there. Yeah. So I think that you're right. He's a lone wolf, but I could see him. I fully predict that the two-parter at the end is going to be episode 7, him going around and building the team, and then episode 8 is going to be whatever the team does.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that's my theory. That's what I would plan, at least, but then I'm not a show writer. So anyhow, so we spend this episode on the planet of Sorgan, and we've got a community there. They've been fishing, I guess, for generations. They've been stocking these little ponds with these very bright blue fish.
Krill looking things.
Yeah, they're krill.
Yeah.
That's actually mentioned in the episode. And they make, I forget what the name of the drink is.
Oh, yeah.
It's right on the tip of my tongue, too. I keep wanting to say gazpacho, and that's not it, but it's like... Anyway, that's what they do. They brew this drink there, and that's kind of their industry, if you will. And they have raiders, and the raiders are Klaatuians of the Klaatu race, as seen initially, and I think exclusively up to this point, in Jabba's Palace in Return of the Jedi. They were, I believe, some of the skiff guards. And I still think that Jon Favreau must really, really hate R6 droids. Yeah. Second episode in a row where the poor R6 droid just gets fried. That's really disappointing. Let's see. What else can we learn from this episode? Bartenders make pretty bad babysitters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But right? She got a lot of money.
So I would say jumping up out of your chair, tossing some coins at the babysitter and saying, keep an eye on the kid. Either... you're choosing the wrong person, or you need to be more specific with your instructions, because she probably did keep an eye on the kid as the kid's walking out the door with the soup.
Well, maybe a little bit more money. I don't know.
Yeah, that too. That was a cool moment in the scene, though, to see the standoff, and then they look up, and the kid's just sitting there, like...
staring.
It's coffee.
Slurping the soup. Yeah. I like the moment with Winta. Can I feed him? Mando says, sure. And I keep thinking, as long as it's not past midnight. And don't get him wet. So, yeah, there weren't...
I felt like the episode started very slowly, in my opinion.
It did. I mean, the entire episode was slow. This is a pretty formulaic... story episode that we see in a lot of different types of shows like this. You go to some, I mean, there were television series back in the 80s where it was just episode after episode of the same story. You go to some place you've never been before. You're the Ronin or the samurai or the lone wolf or the ninja or the gunslinger or whatever you are. And you go in and there's raiders, and you either clear out the raiders yourself, or as time went on, they started to change the story where you train the town to take up arms themselves and defend the raiders. Right. And then, you know, the love interest wants you to stay, and you're like, no, I'm a lone wolf. I gotta follow my own destiny. And they wander off into the sunset with their little green goblin. I mean, we've seen it over and over. Well, okay, not the goblin part, but we've seen it over and over again. And it is a little slow. You're right. Did that bother you? Did it feel? How did it feel?
I kind of snoozed.
Really? Andrea, yeah. The most yo baby heavy episode yet, and you snoozed?
But I don't think that it was because it was boring. I was just tired.
Oh, okay.
But
fair enough.
The fact that it was too slow for me did not help.
Didn't keep you awake.
I enjoyed seeing Kara. I am still iffy about her character. I'm not the type of person that, like, as soon as a character introduced, I'm like, oh my God, this is the best, most amazing thing. Mm-hmm. I'm very hesitant to like characters. So I'm just waiting to see what they're going to do with her. She had a really strong presence.
Yeah.
I really like that when they're walking through the village, you do see a Loth cat.
I didn't like the Loth cat design even in Rebels. I thought it looked, even then I thought it looked cartoony, and now seeing one in real life,
it does look cartoony.
It still felt funny. Cartoony for me.
There's one in a cage in Galaxy's Edge.
Yes.
That was the first time I saw real life.
So to speak. Yeah.
Loth cat, and I thought it was really cool.
It is cool that they integrated it into the series. I'll give it that, but they will always look cartoony to me.
Yeah. When the villagers, the farmers get attacked, I got a very, very, very Lord of the Rings vibe. Just the whole entire way that the village was attacked. I don't know what are they called? The people that were attacking the farmers.
The Clatuians.
Yeah, they look like orcs to me.
They kind of do, but to be fair, they kept the design of this pretty consistent with what they had in Return of the Jedi.
Right.
Yeah, it felt very, very Lord of the Rings to me.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, fair enough. Let's go back to Gina Carano for a moment and talk a little bit about her character, her performance, as you said, her presence on the screen. This is the first time that we're seeing this character who has been long billed as one of the co-stars of the series. And so far, we don't see her until halfway through, and we're pretty certain we're not going to see her for another couple of episodes again. Mm-hmm. So this is like her spotlight for the moment. Fred, what did you think of her performance as far as her portrayal of the character?
I was a little let down.
Okay.
I was expecting a little bit more from her, maybe too much, if that makes sense. I was really hoping for the chemistry to flow better, and it just seemed like she was maybe too thuggish. And I wanted her to be, I guess, more thoughtful or just a little bit more from that character. She just seems like a brute without a lot of thought. Yeah, she's training people how to fight, but I wanted to see maybe a little bit more strategy.
Interesting. I felt kind of the opposite.
Now, that being said, it was only one episode, and I don't want to just throw her under the bus because of one portrayal. So
sure. Absolutely very fair. I mean, let's be clear about the fact that, you know, you're talking about her training people. We got to see very little of it. So we can only go by what we saw. And by what we saw, we didn't really see much of her tactically other than the fight inside that tent, the hand-to-hand fight with the Mandalorian, and then a little bit of strategy at the very end where she was trying to figure out how to try to lure the AT-ST a little closer.
Yeah.
But I get where you're coming from with that. I think for me, a lot of thug characters, it's as much what they're doing when they're not fighting as when they are fighting. And when she wasn't fighting, to me, she came across as very even tempered, very quick witted. She had some insightful moments. And she never came across like she was trying to prove herself, nor did this story make her bombastic and larger than life. It made her very real and genuine, and much like what they did with the Mandalorian. We've talked before about the fact that he's not this superhero. And a lot of times in Star Wars storytelling, I mean, look at Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia and Han Solo, like they never get hit by any blasters ever. And they always just magically kind of are in the right place at the right time and things just fall in line for them. Even when they don't, they really do. And so we're kind of used to this mythological fantasy-based storytelling, and we're not getting that in The Mandalorian, and I like that. I like the fact that it's a little bit more genuine. And to me, her dialogue, her interactions with the Mando, like she was comfortable in her own skin. She didn't feel like she needed to prove herself to him, which also means that she didn't really see him as her better or her superior or anything like that. And to me, that felt good that she could portray that kind of confidence. Like, you know, hey, here, yeah, I'll help out. But like, I don't have to prove anything to you, and I'm here for what I'm here for. And
I just simply got the impression that they were equals or on an equal level of experience.
Right.
And there was no, I didn't feel that she was trying to be his better or anything like that. Right. I guess I just expected a lot from her character. Yet to see. I want to see a little bit more. So,
but I think we're back to the duration issue again, too, though.
Right. I'll reserve judgment until the rest of the season's over.
But if we had more than 30 minutes, we would have gotten more, and it would have been nicer.
And probably only have 8 minutes with her on screen.
Right. I'm sorry, Andrea. I didn't mean to interrupt you. My Skype lag delay didn't kick in until after you would.
Oh, no. I was just going to say that I think maybe this falls into like a tropey kind of situation that we're kind of expecting that we're not getting.
Yeah.
She used to be a former shock trooper. She has the build to be very intimidating and like she can crush your head with just her hands. Like,
right.
She was in the Battle of Endor. Like, we have all these pre-existing expectations of who she is. So perhaps sometimes we build her up to be like, oh, this brute force kind of person. But when we see her on screen, she's more even or level-headed.
Right.
And we don't expect it, right? I do agree that, like, I feel like we should have seen a little bit more of that rough edge, not too trusting of the Mando. I wish there was a little bit more, instead of like, oh yeah, let's just work together for the common good. I wish there was a little bit more tension instead of just like agree and accepting to work together.
Fair enough. But I think we would have
with them.
We would have been able to have an opportunity to see that if we had a 60-minute episode. I think that with 30 minutes, unless they were going to make it a two-parter and they don't have enough episodes this season for that, they had to truncate some things. They had to give us a Reader's Digest condensed version of it. I have to stop using that phrase because nobody in this generation knows what Reader's Digest even is. So I think they really had to make it more concise in order to tell the story they wanted in the amount of time. But I think that's a really good point. It did kind of feel like they learned to trust each other really quickly, and we kind of had to suspend some disbelief there, and I'm okay with that. But yeah, it would have been nice to see a little more organic development of that.
Like, but if I was her, I am a soldier, I've gone to battle, been in the Battle of Endor. I'm in a place where it's kind of a little bit secluded. I have my own history, my own reservations not to trust people. Here comes a person who has this little creature that he's carrying around and it looks like they're hiding, I would be a little bit more hesitant to get my feet wet or just meddle in something that's not my business just in case I get caught.
True. So
again, but I just feel like we just have to accept it for what it is. Okay, yeah. They're friends now. Maybe in future episodes, when she's a little bit more prevalent, we will find out a little bit more about her past, and it'll give her that softer, I want to believe that there's good in the world mentality. But I really do think that because we've been primed to feel like, oh, she's a buffed woman. She needs to be buffed and manly and gives no F's about anything, maybe that's why we feel a little bit off about her character. And again, I feel the same way. I wish we could have seen a little bit more from her.
Yeah. Well, so there's a lot there to look at. And you mentioned something there. I'll work backwards. You mentioned something there at the end where expecting to see this, you know, buff, manly woman, like, you know, kind of, as you said, Fred, a little bit more brutish. And I did kind of like the fact that we could have a female warrior who, I mean, hand-to-hand combat is about as primal and as visceral a form of combat as you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and by the way, Gina Carano, for those who don't know, she used to be on American Gladiators. She's a former MMA fighter. She did a really good job of throwing punches and taking punches in a very believable way. Some of those fight scenes, some of them they did quick cuts. Some of them they didn't do a whole lot of cutaway. Like, she actually delivered those television style punches and taking them herself in a way that was believable, and it worked. I liked the fact that there seemed to be some force behind the hits that she threw. So anyway, that's a side point though. It was nice to be able to see finally a woman portrayed as a combatant, but without having to try to be quote manly. Like, she could just be, like, there was nothing inherently masculine about who she was as a person.
Or completely sexual.
Yeah. I mean, she was completely asexual throughout the whole episode. The whole love interest thing had nothing to do with her. It had to do with, Omera,
mm-hmm.
Winta's mom. And I only got that name through, IMDb. So I don't think she was actually mentioned in the episode, but that was the love interest. But still, the character of,
but could we really
Cara
call
Dune,
it a love interest?
No,
I
no,
think
no.
It was
I'm
more
I,
affection
yeah.
interest.
Yeah, I'm, you know, being hyperbolic here, but yeah, but the trope of the love interest wasn't directed toward Cara Dune. It was directed toward an entirely different character.
Right, and I like that. I thought that played really well.
Yeah, so. Back to the whole trooper aspect. What troopers have we seen as far as good guys so far in Star Wars that where we've actually gotten to focus on the ground troopers for the Republic?
Ben.
The clone troopers?
The clone troopers. And they were all clones. And they were all solely based around combat. Like, they didn't have downtime. They didn't kick their feet up in the little you know, farming village and just kind of look at the sunset and stuff. No, they fought 24/7. Well, yeah. Okay. One of them did, but we have been trained in Star Wars to think of, like, if we see Republic shock troopers, we know what that means. They're just like, oh, go, 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 deploy, deploy, deploy.
Yeah.
Well, that's not what she's about. She's, as she said, early retirement. And the way she says it kind of makes it sound like there's a story behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's not, you know, she is there to retire. She's there to just take it easy and to get away from everything, whether she's hiding or not. And so I liked the fact that she didn't come across as bloodthirsty, brutish, and instead was more level-headed, and she thought things out. And yeah, as a side note, I liked the fight scenes too.
Yeah, the action scenes were second to none. I really enjoyed every aspect of her fight scenes. I even liked the part where she was doing the training of what little bit we got to see.
Yeah.
And the fight scene between her and the Mando at the
that was a fun
at
one.
The start. I thought that was pretty fun.
Absolutely.
None of my criticisms had to do with her action scenes or anything like that. I just wanted to see more from her character.
Okay.
In development. And it's still early on, and so I'm not going to hold that against the show for now. And it's probably more to do with writing and story progression. If the episode was longer, it probably would have got that, and I would have warmed up to that character a bit more.
Yeah, I think that's a writing issue.
So
I will say that Gina Carano, I feel like she delivered her dialogue really well, and it was, she was soft spoken and yet assertive at the same time. It never felt like she was shouting at the camera. It never felt like she was, again, it was, she wasn't ever trying to prove herself.
Soft spoken.
Yeah. Yeah. She was comfortable in her own skin, and she said what she had to say. She was very direct about it. And I liked how real it felt. I'm having a really difficult time trying to quantify what it is about her performance of the character that I really latched onto, but there was something about her delivery that I just really liked. It was like, wow, that is such a refreshing way to see that portrayed.
It's the fact that it was very natural.
Very natural.
It felt like you were talking to a human and it wasn't acted. It was genuine.
Yes, there you go. It never felt like she was acting.
Yeah, it was very genuine to who she is.
Right.
She's a tough woman. That's who she is as a person, not a character. And she's portraying that. She's portraying a tough character, a tough exterior character, but she's probably inside very soft-spoken.
And when she was soft-spoken, it never came across as a weakness either. It never came across as a character flaw, and then the tough exterior was compensating for it. It just felt like this is just naturally an entire character.
And to be honest, I can relate to that. And like,
I don't know. I've never seen you fight. I mean, you know, you
don't want to.
You and Fred, when you do the camera thing, you're in separate rooms, and I don't see any of the blood. You clean it up really well before we record. So
no. Like, no, what I'm saying is that, like, when people see me in person, they can be extremely intimidated by me. And then when I open my mouth, that's when they know that I am approachable and I am genuine and stuff like that. But like, how I come off as is very intimidating. And I can relate to that when it comes to this character.
Yeah. All right. How does Omera know how to handle a blaster so well?
Oh, there's some backstory there.
And we'll probably never find out.
Oh, there'll be like a comic, 6 books, and...
Well, that's true. I bet Marvel's already writing it.
There'll be some factoid on the back of a cereal box.
Yeah, it'll be in the Mandalorian, the Visual Encyclopedia by Pablo Hidalgo. Yes. And no, that's not, I should clarify or I'm going to get nailed. That's not a thing. I just made it up. We're not getting any such book, at least not that we know of. So this episode was directed by Bryce Dallas Howard, who is the daughter of Ron Howard, who directed Solo. She also was in The Village, I think was the first thing I'd ever seen her in. She was in the Jurassic World movies. I think she's directed some other things, though. A lot of times when actors migrate into directing, I lose track of, you know, where they're doing what. So it's not just her that I don't remember what she did. So I'm sorry about that. But anyway, she directed this episode. What did you guys think of how the episode itself was presented in the context of pacing and the way shots were framed and how they chose what characters to focus on, et cetera, like the directing aspect of it. Any thoughts?
It was visually appealing. Mm-hmm. I like when a show or a movie can tell a story without a lot of dialogue. And this is what The Mandalorian is doing very well. Through visuals, we see what the farming community is like. Through just the interaction of the Mando looking at Kara and then walking away, you see there's that bit of tension between these two characters that haven't even met. I really, really like it. And I think that everybody that has stepped up to do an episode of The Mandalorian has executed that ability to tell a story without talking and ruining it ruining a show with dialogue.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
It's interesting.
There is that potential.
Yeah. This really is a show where the directors have to be on the ball, and it's almost become a showcase of some really skilled directors. And I hope that they they look back on this as a way to utilize some really good directors for things in the future. As you said, it's more compelling when you can show a story rather than just explain a story.
Exactly.
And this show, more than any other show I can think of recently, has so little dialogue as far as overall screen time goes that the directors really have to be able to do a lot of visual storytelling in an effective mm-hmm. way. And that really came out, I think, in this episode. There's really not.
In 10 episodes, there is no time to waste. And you'd think that they would want to throw a lot of dialogue to fill in the gaps, but they're doing so well explaining a story without too much.
Yeah.
I don't know, one of the coolest moment and the scariest moment is that final scene when you see the sniper ready to shoot the baby, the child. And all of a sudden, similar to what happened to IG-11, is it?
Yeah.
Is it? No. Yeah. You hear the shot, but you do not know what is that shot. You thought it was Baby Yoda dying in the first episode, but then you also feel like it is Baby Yoda who dies in this episode. And although you feel like that could possibly not happen, we can't fulfill Eric's wishes. I like that tension. I really like that tension.
Yeah. I'm not saying I wish that to happen. I'm saying I'm rapidly getting there thanks to the internet. No, you bring up a really good point because we just saw this with IG-11. They should not be able to fool us again on this. And I think, yeah, we all knew they weren't going to shoot the baby, but it was so skillfully done. Like when the shot actually happens, we are watching the Mando and Omera.
Yeah.
And they both turn toward the wood. So we know there was a shot. We know the sniper just had the baby lined up perfectly. We saw his finger start to squeeze the trigger. We heard the shot. We know that is exactly what had to have happened. They cut back to the kids for just a second. We don't really see Yo Baby's head, though we see a little bit of the robes at the bottom. One of the girls, I think, is kind of in position in front of him based on where the camera angle is. And then we cut back to the woods and we see the shooter. Yeah. And then the shooter falls over and we see Cara Dune. So that shot was pulled off so well. I mean, the TV shot, not the gun shot.
Yeah,
but that
failed at that one.
Skillfully done.
Yeah, and honestly, there was a point where I thought that when he's looking through his scope, it looks like the child is looking directly at the scope. So part of me felt like he was going to use the Force in some way, but I'm really happy that he didn't. I'm really happy that it was another chance for Kara to showcase her skillfulness.
Well, and the use of the Force, they really need to minimize.
And they have.
Yeah, they have. Yeah. You know, there are a lot of shots in this episode that between the way they shot the fight scenes, again, they could have done a lot more with quick edits than they did. The way they framed Yo Baby sipping the soup over top of them. The way they handled Yo Baby walking into the bar and looking around and kind of taking it all in, much like he did in a previous episode as he's walking down the street. When they arrived at the beginning of episode 3, shots like that really help us connect a little bit with like what's going on in this kid's mind right now. And the shot where the Mando's asking the bartender about Kara, and then all of a sudden, seemingly without the camera angle changing, they look and Kara's gone. And it's like, oh, I wasn't expecting that. I should have been expecting it. It's been done in storytelling before, but here I am watching it. Wasn't expecting it. Right. And I paid closer attention to that shot the second time around. And I thought that was really like, it's a minor little thing, but Bryce carried it out really well and it caught you off guard. And she did that a few times in different ways in this episode, I think. And I like that. I want the director to catch me off guard. I don't want to be able to predict not just every single element of the story, but every shot. So kudos to her.
Oh, this leads to one of the criticisms that I have in this episode is the AT-ST.
Okay.
So I haven't, I'll accept the fact that they got an AT-ST and were able to bring it to this planet, because I don't think the Empire was ever here. They would have had to, you know, pack it up and use UPS or something.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm sure it was a mercenary black market sort of thing. Yeah.
But the one scene where the AT-ST is coming up to the camp and is coming through the trees,
yeah,
I thought that was done really poorly.
How so?
So you have the red eyes of the AT-ST.
Yeah.
And it would not be... Okay, so trees are literally just falling over. In my opinion, the AT-ST is not strong enough or powerful enough to push those trees over.
So that is a good point. You could go out on a limb and say, well, it depends on, you know, what type of trees they are and what the ground is like. But yeah, on the surface, I don't have a good answer for that one. That's a really good point.
Now, it's obviously it's really nitpicky, but this is what we do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why we're here.
It's just the one scene out of the entire episode that I thought was a little off.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I'm happy when we have to go to things like that to nitpick about. Like, if that's the worst thing about this episode, we're doing good. I'm
probably
happy.
Probably, what, a 3-4 second scene?
Yeah. Yeah. No, but you're right. I mean, that's legit. How did it get through those trees? I don't know. So, one of the other things that I'm sure I'm one of the few people who picked up on this and one of the even fewer people who actually care. I was really excited to see Eugene Cordero in this. And part of it is because I'm a big fan of Other Space. It was a series by, and I always get confused with Kevin Feige, but it's by Paul Feig, who was the creator of the Bridesmaid movie and various other TV comedies and stuff. He did this short.
I thought he was going to die.
I thought he was going to die too. So he did this series originally for Yahoo, when Yahoo was trying to come up with their own original series and stuff, called Other Space. And it only ran for 6 to 8 episodes. If you can find it, it is incredible in a really stupid way. It's a Star Trek-y like series, but it's about these absolutely incompetent people who are in a starship and get whisked off through a wormhole to some other end of the galaxy, and they're trying to get by and they're just completely incompetent. But Eugene Cordero is one of the characters on that ship, on that series. He plays Michael. And ever since that, I've fallen in love with him. I notice him in everything I see him in. He was in Kong Skull Island. He played Pillboy in The Good Place. So when they flash back to Florida, the one guy's buddy, that's him. So anyway, okay. He's one of the two guys that hired the Mandalorian in this episode. He plays Stoke. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just a little a trivia thing for this episode. I was really happy to see him there.
Awesome.
So... All right, so we've got just the two episodes left. We've talked before about, a little bit about what that's going to consist of.
Just the two episodes left?
Yeah, you're
well, before
me.
We get to, hold on, before we get to the finale. So the first of the two,
okay.
The Mandalorian helps a rookie bounty hunter who's in over his head. The second of the two, the Mandalorian joins a crew of mercenaries on a dangerous mission. Now... Some people are saying that's him building the team. I'm saying, no, if he's joining a crew, there's a crew that exists and he's joining into it. So those are the two that we get before what I presume is the two-part finale, where they darn well better. This foreshadowing of until our paths cross, their paths better cross, dang it, in episode 7. Or Bob Iger, get your lawyers. I'm telling you right now, man. So, I guess another critique for me is the casting and everything. I was getting really excited about the casting for this show, and we get to see so many of them so infrequently. We get IG-11 for one episode. We get Carl Weathers for bits of two episodes. We get Nick Nolte and Kuiil for two episodes.
Two episodes.
We get Gina Carano as Cara Dune for one episode. I want more. I want this to become a family of sorts, a team, an ensemble. And I really think the Razor Crest is going to be a little tight, and maybe they're going to need some base of operation somewhere instead. But I would like to see him, Cara Dune as, the soldier, IG-11 as the DPS, so to speak, and Kuiil as a technician. I think they could probably fit four people on that ship, especially if you consider one of the four is effectively a droid. You know, plug him in a corner. It's not like he needs space.
Okay. No, I completely agree. It's just a matter of when are they going to do the team up and how that's going to start.
Yeah. Well, and another thing, too, is if you have a base of operations, maybe they'll even use Kuiil's place for that. Kuiil could stay there. He doesn't have to be.
Right.
You know, if they're operating out of a location, he doesn't have to be on every mission. Now, if they're operating out of the ship, he obviously does.
So if he's operating out of the ship, then we have to have some exposition of how he goes back and gets Kara, goes back and gets Kuiil, somehow finds IG-11.
Right.
Now, if they do it all in one episode, is that going to be enjoyable?
They'll have to montage it. They'll have to come up with the reason he needs to do this. And so that's going to have to be act one of the, again, way too short episode. Then they're going to have to montage some of it. Part of it is going to have to be him convincing IG-11B that there's a good reason to team up. I don't think that Kara is going to take a whole lot of convincing. And then Kuiil, if something happened that Kuiil's home was destroyed, then I think Kuiil would join him.
That would make sense.
Barring that, though, but back to your point, though, would it be interesting to watch an entire episode of just that? If they make the character moments powerful enough, it could be. But it would have to clearly be part of a two-parter, and they would still have to introduce some sort of a threat. They'd have to do something to convince us there are stakes involved that are so high that this is necessary. And then we get the resolution of them, you know, overcoming some sort of challenge in bringing them together to succeed in bringing them together. And then they go fly off to confront the big threat. End part one, begin part two.
And have that big threat be big enough that everyone is going to be invested. So right. It can't just be the Mandalorian's goal with companions. It's going to have to be something that all four of them would want to team up for.
So what do those three characters have at stake? IG-11. I got nothing. Kuiil.
Yeah, but IG-11, you could kind of play the fact that, oh, we rebuilt the droid and we can change his programming. Okay, I could live with that.
Right, but what's his motivation?
Because we need some more muscle.
What's IG-11B's motivation to, or what's his vulnerability? Like, so for example, we'll come back to him for a second. Kara obviously has a history. She kind of has this look on her face when she mentions early retirement. Something happened there. If that comes back to bite her, or the Mandalorian finds out that people are out to get her in the process of him needing to build a team, that could be a reason why she agrees to join. With Kuiil, he just wanted peace in his little homestead there. And if there's no longer peace, or he no longer has a homestead, I could see him joining the Mandalorian. So there's that, the vulnerability and the loss that would create motivation. What is IG-11B's, I keep wanting to say IG-88, IG-11B's potential motivation?
For Kara's, I could understand, like, the New Republic has formed. They don't need shock troopers anymore. So she's been forced into early retirement and she's not done her fight yet. So I could kind of get that, as long as they're going after that Empire faction that's still remaining.
Right.
So that would make sense. For Kuiil, yeah, what you were saying, if they destroy his homestead, that's fine and I can make that work. as like a revenge tactic or something of that nature. But for IG-11, like, I can simply just take it as the Mando has reprogrammed him with a different personality.
And or maybe just, had Kuiil do it.
Yeah, exactly. So that works too.
Or, and that would mean that he's in the ship right now.
Well, they can go get him. Or
yeah, I'm sure they'd have to cross paths with him at some point, stun him, knock him out, do the reprogramming.
Mm-hmm. IG-11 is still with Kuiil on his planet.
That's true. So that's if they go back to find him, they could just grab him.
Yeah, I mean, we never saw the corpse. But presumably he had to download his consciousness somewhere or have it duplicated somewhere. At least, again, that's something that we saw in Legends with IG-88. And I could see them, you know, bringing that sort of thing back.
It depends how they play that. If they resurrect the current body and the current programmed memory chips or whatever, or if they are going to dump that into a new droid.
Exactly. Now, if there is an existing IG-11B consciousness somewhere that gets downloaded into a new droid, maybe they could convince him that the guild wasn't supposed to be sending multiple people out for the same bounty. So the guild kind of violated their own rules, and that goes against his programming logic. And then, you know, can they convince him that he needs to go cleanse the guild?
That could work as well.
A little bit of a stretch. You'd have to clean that idea up a little bit, but I don't know, possible. None of these are going to happen. If all of these happen, just like I just said, somebody at Lucasfilm needs to contact me and give me a job, even just like as a janitor. I don't care, but like, I don't know. It's not going to happen that way. They're going to come up with some better way to do things than what I just spewed out.
Even the janitor gets a paycheck from Lucasfilm Limited.
Yeah, I would frame that $10 paycheck like you wouldn't believe. I'd spend nine of those $10 on the frame. Yeah. All right. Anything else about this episode, episode 4 of The Mandalorian, that you guys want to talk about or that stands out? I think it was a good episode. It was a little standalone-ish, but I liked it.
Yeah, I think they're building the blocks, getting the pieces put in place for the remaining half of season one.
Yeah. And I have to say, I liked the introduction of Cara Dune. I wish it had been something that would continue. And I know it will continue later on, but based on what we have at the moment, I was really disappointed for them to introduce a character like that and then say, okay, well, we're leaving you. So long. Farewell.
Yeah, I was definitely expecting a little bit more of an arc with where they were coming here, but it looks like it was just a one episode and done.
Yeah, but there's no doubt with all the foreshadowing they're doing, there's going to be a big team building episode at the end.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you what, that's going to do it for this episode of Knights of the Holotable. We've got another episode coming up on, let's see, the 6th, I believe, December 6th.
Yes.
All right. And that's going to be episode 5. And that's going to be the one where the Mando is helping out a rookie bounty hunter who gets in over his head. So be sure to catch that. And then check in again shortly afterwards for the next Knights of the Holotable. But in the meantime, we want to know what you thought of this episode. Both this episode of Knights of the Holotable, but also this episode of The Mandalorian. So different ways you can do that. One, you can send us an email, knights@randomchatter.com. That's how you can email us. You can also message us on Twitter or Instagram. You can catch us either at Random Chatter or at Force Chatter. You can join us in Discord. And honestly, Discord is probably one of the best ways to converse with us, because not only are you interacting directly with us, you are interacting with other fans as well. And there is a lot of chatter going on in our Discord server about The Mandalorian. It's a good place to be if you're a Mandalorian fan. So to do that, go to randomchatter.com/Discord. You can get the app for free. You can get into the server for free. We have channels set up for every single one of the shows on the Random Chatter Podcast Network. Now, for those who want to donate to help support the network, if you go to randomchatter.com/Patreon, there'll be more information there about how to do that. And even just $1 a month, which, by the way, legitimately is a big help, will get you access to the rest of the Discord server. We set up a bunch of additional channels kind of as a thank you to the people who wanted to help support the network financially. And those include spoiler channels. They include some more Mandalorian-specific channels, several Star Wars channels, but also channels on other franchises as well. There's lots of content there. So again, if you want more information on that, randomchatter.com/Patreon. You can also help support the network by going to randomchatter.com/store, and you can pick up a t-shirt or a hoodie or a coffee mug, whatever you'd like there. And also just spread the word. You know, I know you guys are out there talking to your friends about The Mandalorian. I have been stopped. I wore Star Wars t-shirts for most of the last week. I have been stopped in 4 different stores by probably 10 different complete strangers, half of them salespeople, who start asking questions about The Mandalorian. How they think I'm an expert somehow, I have no idea, but... like I'm getting my son's food from Taco Bell at the food court at the mall, and he said, "I got a question for you." And I'm like, "Uh-oh, what did my son do now?" I'm like, so the Mandalorian, like, do they like retcon the whole Legends thing or like blah 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 blah? And I'm like, "Oh no, dude, it's all right. It's good stuff. Check it out." But I know you guys out there are talking to your friends about the Mandalorian and about Disney Plus and stuff. So let them know that there's a podcast out there that they should check out that covers The Mandalorian. It's not just a fan-based recap show. We actually dive into the content and discuss the ramifications of that on the Star Wars galaxy and what's coming next and what we thought of the characters, etc. Tell your friends. Help grow the community that you are already a part of. So that's it. It's going to wrap it up for Knights of the Holotable. As silly as the sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. And until next week, take care, everybody.
We have spoken.
We have spoken. This is the way.